you in the home 6010.
Welcome to Fantasy Focus. Today's podcast is presented by Geico. You can watch us every weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on ESPN's Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube feeds, as well as the ESPN app, and you can download Fantasy Focus wherever you get your podcasts. Happy New Year! It's just the first time we have talked to you in 2022. Field, Matthew, Stefania, and Daniel all here. It's week 18. Let's get weird, Matthew. What a weekend it was of football.
So, all right. I can't. I have many reactions here. So first off, Happy New Year to everyone. I hope everyone had a safe, happy, healthy holiday. When you say let's get weird.
Weirder in your case, but yeah.
I mean, look at this podcast. You've got Secret Squirrel over there.
Why is it always Daniel?
Why is it always me?
He's always the punching bag for you.
All I'm just saying is that if you were going to pick, Thirsty Kyle, I need a poll here. I mean, because you think about Stefania. Stefania likes her wine. You know, she's adventurous. Daniel, obviously, with the beard and the tats and the nose ring and the whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. I'm weird. But you're that's the first time in your life you've ever uttered the phrase, let's get weird.
No.
You didn't go to college.
You obviously don't know. Do you listen to your co-host at all?
When he says, let's get
weird. No, Stefania.
Stefania.
He did.
Stefania, when he says, let's get weird, he means unbuttoning one extra button on his Oxford shirt is what he means. That means you know what? I might have a shoelace out of place. I might. Let's get weird. I'm not going to shave today. That Field saying.
Could you tell?
When Field says, let's get weird, it means, you know what I'm doing? I'm going 56 and a 55. Oh, yeah. That's Field getting weird. When you say, let's get weird, Daniel, help me out here.
Yes.
I think the last person on this podcast that should be saying let's get weird is Field Yates, who I would believe has never gotten weird in his life.
He's a hater.
I'm not a hater.
No, you're a hater.
I mean, I live in Weirdville. I am the mayor of Weird City.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'm the poster boy for
I've
new Weirdville. What?
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah.
Daniel.
I have puppets as friends.
I need Stefania and Daniel to help me out here because here's the deal.
Yeah.
You put so much energy, Matthew does, into interpreting the opening sentence of what I say on this podcast when I literally put 0 ounces of effort into thinking of what I'm going to say. It is just the first thing that comes to mind when the show begins and the red lights are on and we're trying to say hello. We're trying to get to the live reads.
Sure.
We're trying to talk about fantasy football. You pay more attention to that opening line than you do the rest of the lines combined in the podcast.
I disagree. Can I tell you something? I'll be honest with you. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I disagree on that. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because I'm not focused on that. I'm just, as soon as the red light goes on, you know what I'm doing? And I'm about to say this and there are examples that you can easily point to where this is not true. But generally speaking, as somebody who has been in, as somebody who has been in front of a microphone or a camera at ESPN for 15 years.
Yikes.
And probably... You know, I would say 22 years in my professional career, maybe 25.
Okay.
I think I don't have a ton of skill, but I think one thing that I actually do very well
womp womp
is listen. And again, I know there are examples.
What? You're being serious.
Examples.
This is a serious conversation. No.
No. I know. There are examples you guys can point to where I absolutely was
examples.
Not listening. 100%.
That's correct.
He's here to point to the examples of where you were.
I was going to say,
do you have an example of you listening?
Yes, just then.
Oh.
Where you said, let's get weird. So
the
as soon as the lights
line,
go on,
the field's point,
I am focused.
The first line.
Okay.
What? Stefania? No, I
listen.
He was too busy listening to her to hear what she had to say.
I'm talking. I don't listen when I'm talking.
Oh,
you talk about 90% of the podcast.
By the way, what?
Didn't you ask Field to say something different besides, how are you doing?
Sure.
Because he would ask you how you're doing, and you were like, you know, I'm fine. I'm always fine. And Field, why do we always start with how? So Field says, let's get weird.
Right.
And now you're like, that's not going to work for me. Right.
I didn't say it's not going to work for me. I'm just saying, like, the idea of Field Yates suggesting let's get weird is ironic, is what it is. It's ironic.
Unintentionally. Unintentionally.
Right? Ironic. You know, yes. Like, Daniel, wow. Help me out here.
No, you're not wrong. No, you've been backed into a corner, old man.
I love I'm, not backing, I'm not backing down.
No, you've been backed into a corner. I didn't say you're backing down.
I'm fine. I like my corner.
By the way,
nobody puts baby in a corner.
Great Tom Petty song, just for the record.
Don't back down.
Oh, yeah. Great Tom Petty song.
It's no 38 special. Yeah. Caught Up in You, still their number one.
Hold on, oh my God, so wrong. Hold on loosely. Harrington, you guys, you don't get a vote.
If you watch Fantasy Football Now yesterday. Yeah.
If you watch Fantasy Football Now, you know what you're talking about.
And it's Hold On Loosely. And those of us who lived during the 38 special era get a double vote.
You know, I'll just say, fair.
Matthew was their top roadie.
I think 38 Special is overrated. There, I said it.
Wow.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? Further evidence that Matthew Berry never listens. You never listen.
We got to talk football.
That is not true. Those two songs are so overplayed and overrated. Wow. And I am very familiar, obviously, with the classic rock era, especially the Southern classic rock era, as somebody who was a classic rock DJ throughout high school and lived in Texas. I literally, my high school job in Texas was as a DJ for a classic rock station. I've literally, like I said, when I said I've been in front of a microphone since I was 14 years old, I've literally been in front of a microphone since I was 14 years old.
Popular,
and I'm just telling you, 30 Special
days.
Is overrated, and I'm right on this. What?
I'm trying to figure.
Listening. I'm not listening. Now I'm done. I'm not getting credit for listening, so why should I?
All right.
Let's do football.
Let's talk some football.
Tell me I'm wrong on 38 Special. Go ahead.
You know, no, you're wrong.
Before
you're wrong.
We move on, I just
Thirsty
know.
Kyla demand a poll. Thirsty Kyla demand a poll. Is 38 Special overrated, yes or no?
Kyle's like, who the heck is 38 Special? Kyle thinks it's like a play call from like the Eagles offensive playbook.
Exactly. Thirsty Kyle, it's .38.
Yeah. .38. No doubt.
.38 Special.
All right. Let's get to it. But Stefania has a closing note before we get to football. What are we going to say to Stefania?
Yeah, what do you got?
Oh, that if we ever want to get the official vote on whether Matthew listens,
Call's
I know
wife.
Who to ask.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah.
And Call's her wife. Name is... It begins with a B.
my wife.
And ends with an F. Yeah. Beth.
F Bay.
Let's talk football.
Beth, yeah.
Shall we?
Yeah.
All right, a couple injuries to get to before all the magnificent performances.
You understand, I have to tune Beth out sometimes. You understand, like it's an act. I actively don't listen to her on purpose.
I think she actively
sometimes.
Doesn't listen to you most
you
all of
so
the time.
You have so many caveats is, about your is, listening
one,
skills here.
One of the reasons
here.
Our marriage has lasted is just actively ignoring each other. There you go.
Stefania, let's get to the injuries. We begin in Cincinnati, where they got a huge win yesterday over the Chiefs. They are now AFC North champions. Joe Burrow was on the field until the very last offensive play of the game. What happened there?
Yeah, he limped over to the sideline, and later when he was talking to reporters, he said he aggravated something in his right knee, but he was also very dismissive of it, like it wasn't a big deal. And just to point out, remind people, this is not the same knee that he had the major reconstructive surgery on, but something that he had tweaked in his right knee, and he said he'd be fine, so we shall see.
I didn't actually see it. I did hear reports that like people saw, they saw videos of him dancing in the locker room because obviously they celebrated. They are the AFC North champions. Right. By the way, congratulations to Cincinnati Bengals fans. Yeah, I am, man. You know me, like, I've had a whole love-hate relationship with the Bengals as a team and an organization over the years. I have always sided with the fans of the franchise. I am thrilled for them today. It has been a long time coming. I'm excited for Cincinnati Bengals fans.
No doubt about that. And by the way, Cincy has clinched the AFC North, but not a specific seed. We'll see whether they play next week. There's a lot of teams. Like, everybody but Green Bay can move up or down in the playoff standings or has something to play for that is still alive in the playoffs. So it's too soon to tell whether or not we'll see any starters other than likely Green Bay's rest. Some have speculated that Cincinnati may want to be a team that is mindful of their starters next week. We'll cross that bridge later on in the week. Stefania, Kyle Pitts set a record yesterday, becoming just the second tight end in the NFL history to have at least 1,000 yards as a rookie. He also got banged up in the process.
Yeah, he was running a route across the middle of the field and appeared to pull up and grab his right hamstring. Now, he did stay in for the first half, tried to come out, play in the first series, but quickly it was apparent, as Arthur Smith noted afterward, that he just could not go. And so that was the end of Kyle Pitts for the day. They would not elaborate on the nature of his injury, and so we will wait to see how they update him this week.
Got to figure they'll play it smart with their one of their franchise cornerstones, a guy who, I don't know about quietly, but has been really good this year. I know not great or dominant for fantasy, but still a really superb season for him, and the future is extremely bright. The Jets, Stefania, played really gritty yesterday against the Bucks, and they did so for a good stretch of time without Michael Carter.
Yeah, before he left, he had 3 carries for 54 yards. I mean, he looked really good. Michael Carter left the game with a concussion. You know, he missed 3 weeks earlier in the season with that ankle injury, came back, was a little rusty the first week, then had the following week 116 yards rushing and a couple of catches. And so just unfortunate that he left with a concussion. As we all know by now, they are nonlinear. We shall see how he progresses over the course of the week.
Austin Walter had the majority of the carries after he left the game. Tevin Coleman's on the reserve COVID-19 list. We would suspect Coleman has a chance to be available in week 18. Again, we'll follow that one throughout the week. And this one, Stefania, was a real bummer for me. Michael Gallup, the Cowboys wide receiver, scored a touchdown on a brilliant play.
Brilliant.
And at the same time, suffered a significant knee injury.
If you want to see incredible, go back and look at this in slow motion, because what happens is he gets to the end zone, he pivots on his left leg to go up and make the catch, and his foot is planted. And so that plant and rotation, it's a mechanism for an ACL injury. If you know these things, you kind of see it. You see the player go down in a heap, and you think that could be exactly what happened. Jerry Jones saying afterward that they did suspect an ACL injury. Obviously, he's having follow-up tests today. But if you want to see incredible grit, go watch Michael Gallup go up in the air, knowing he's hurt the injury. Told one of his teammates later he felt his knee pop, sort of a hallmark sign for an ACL tear. Makes the catch and lands with that leg kind of flopping, like holds on to the ball, manages to not put weight on the leg as he comes down, and then immediately grabs his knee. That's incredible presence of mind in the face of what will be a season-ending injury. And you just hope that he comes back to pre-injury form. Look, he missed 7 weeks earlier this year with that calf injury, and he came back and he was great. And so just really unfortunate for him, as we know he heads into free agency, that this is how the season ends for him. A lot of people asking, will he be ready for week one? That doesn't really matter. What matters is that he comes back to pre-injury form. We've seen this before. Guys who might miss a week or two or three or four, it doesn't matter as long as they come back and they're ready when they come back. So I hope he's granted that time.
Here's to a speedy recovery for Michael Gallup, and I think he'll still get a large bag in free agency, which he certainly deserves. The Cowboys turned to Cedric Wilson a little bit more yesterday after the Michael Gallup injury. I suppose there's a chance the Cowboys could play the normal guys.
Can I ask you one question real quickly? I'm just curious, because so we coming up later in the show, hopefully we'll get to it. But we talked about like players we're looking forward to, you know, and we were emailing yesterday, and I was gonna put my plan in terms of players I'm looking forward to next year.
Yeah.
Michael Gallup would have been my choice prior to this ACL tear, because again, I think he has number one wide receiver talent. He just hasn't had number one wide receiver role on this team, obviously, because they have an abundance of talent at the wide receiver position. So I was kind of looking forward to him being like the alpha dog, or at least, you know, the number two to a really strong number one. What do you think? So you still think he will, do you think he's going to get a large guaranteed contract? Or do you think the market for him might be a one-year prove-it deal?
I think that would only happen if that was what he preferred. I think he'll end up getting a big contract this offseason. He kind of checks all the boxes you're looking for in free agency. He's 25 years old, or after his fourth season, ascending player. Sometimes when a player reaches free agency, there's a bit of hesitation, because if he's so good, why is his team letting him get to the end of that contract? For Dallas, it's because they just have so many other wide receivers already under contract, specifically their top two in Amari Cooper and also CeeDee Lamb. And also they got a lot of other large commitments. Like Michael Gallup reaching the open market would not be a reflection of how the Cowboys feel about him. So I think there's a big market for him. The NFL wide receiver market this offseason does not look loaded, especially if a couple of the top guys like Davante Adams are retained by their incumbent teams. Right. I think it'll be in a good spot.
All right. Good. Well,
there's enough people who've come back from this injury and proven, like if you look at how Courtland Sutton was pretty great you know, coming out of the gate as a wide receiver coming off an ACL, MCL injury. I think that there's enough precedent there that people have more confidence in how players will come back from this injury.
Yeah, Cortland Sutton is a great example there, Stefania. And you know what? Is this Dak's fault for the bad throw?
Wow.
He had to make a... Stop it. Anyway, I feel terrible because Michael Gallup, you know, one of my favorite players, love the player. As a Washington fan, I'm excited to get him, hopefully get him out of the division.
He'll go to Philly.
Probably. Go to watch him go to New York. $140 million for a quarterback that can't throw. Two wide receivers. Anyway, just awful with Michael Gallup. But you know, I'm going to cross my fingers and hope for the best for him that he is back better than ever. Stefania, I think the Cortland Sutton example is a great one. Yep. By the way, speaking of a young wide receiver who got paid.
Yeah, he certainly did. Let's keep things moving here. And let's get some of the popular players on ESPN finalists, teams that were in the finals of their league. And nobody was on more finalist rosters, or nobody was on a finalist roster in a higher percentage of leagues than Cooper Kupp, who was on a finalist roster in 48% of leagues, was Matthew's little Cooper Kupp.
Thank you.
How did he do yesterday? Just a ho-hum, 21.5 fantasy points, 6 catches, 95 yards, and a touchdown, which means he has a touchdown or 10 catches in 5 straight games. One of the great...
And 10 of the past 11.
Unbelievable. 13 games this year with at least 20 fantasy points. Remarkable. We're going to talk about lessons learned at some point later on in the show, and I think that Cooper Kupp is a valuable one for a lot of us that make fantasy football a big part of our living here at ESPN. One of the great mysteries this year for me is that Cooper Kupp did this every single week, like literally every week, and no team seemed to have even like a slight counter to this. Like it never felt like... A few weeks ago when the Ravens played the Packers, we all saw the various screenshots and clips of how the Ravens basically just said, somebody can beat us today, but it's not going to be Devontae Adams. I'm so surprised that wasn't the case with the Rams at any point this season. Like, not that they have, you know, scrub wide receivers besides Cooper Kupp. They've got Odell Beckham Jr. and Van Jefferson amongst their pass catchers. But, like, wouldn't you rather take your chances with somebody else as opposed to Cooper Kupp?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a credit to Cooper Kupp. It's a credit to Sean McVay and the play calling there. And, you know, I think there's something to the effect of that, you know, he lines up at the slot. They line up all over the field. They're really creative in how they use him, how they deploy him. Matthew Stafford as well, credit him. It's been an up and down year for Stafford. But one thing that's been consistent is he's been able to find Cooper Kupp all over the field on short routes, on long routes, on seam routes. I mean, like, you pick it. And Cooper Kupp is there. He is so good after the catch as well. Just, you know, just an unbelievable season for him. Seattle seemed to have the best, you know, if there was a team, I feel like his two worst games of the year were against Seattle off the top of my head, but I could be dead wrong on that. Of course, Kyle will keep me honest there. But yeah, I mean, so maybe it's just a lack of good slot corners or just, you know, the difficulty of guarding somebody that good.
Yeah, I think Seattle may have gotten him in the first game. The second game on Tuesday night, he was still really good.
He was 5 for 64 in week 4.
Yeah.
Against Arizona.
By the way, just looking at his numbers at the end of the year.
Yeah.
138 catches.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, over 1,800 receiving yards.
Yeah, also good.
And 15 receiving touchdowns.
That's
like
amazing.
That is a massive production slate just across the board. Unreal.
Yeah. We're going to do an award show next week.
He's going to win some.
He might win every award.
Way to blow this.
Thank you,
sorry,
guys.
Sorry, guys.
He might win everything.
Give it away.
Let's keep things moving here. Mark Andrews was a second highest rostered player in terms of leagues in which...
Hey, if you want to really get weird, Field, say something bad about Cooper Kupp.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, but that's not a nice
that would
way
be
to get
disingenuous.
Weird. That's not.
Oh, so now it's, well, let's get weird, but in a nice way.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to be mean to get
Who's
weird.
Being mean? I'm just saying that would be weird to say something bad about Cooper Kupp.
Why you got to say something bad about somebody? I don't
know. He
hasn't been as good toward the second half of the year as he was in the first half of the year.
There you go. Wow.
Daniel has a better beer than Cooper Kupp.
That's fair.
Okay.
That's what I want to know.
Let's move things forward here. That's Mark Andrews had 6 catches on 6 targets for 89 yards yesterday for the Ravens. He was on a roster in 38% of leagues. Or on a finalist roster in 38% of leagues.
so good down the stretch. He had over 14 fantasy points in 7 of his past 8 games. Over his last 4 games, he's caught 35 of 40 targets. Did not find the end zone yesterday, and still a remarkable, remarkable finish for Mark Andrews. I think, and I could be living as a prisoner of the moment right now, I think the conversation surrounding the number one tight end in fantasy next year will not be as simple as it has been in recent years. And that has nothing to do with Travis Kelce, by the way. It's just the emergence of somebody like Mark Andrews. George Kittle had a remarkable stretch at one point this year. I think they'll just be, there are enough players that are just so talented at that spot now that the case for the number one tight end is like slightly less certain than it has been over the past 3 to 4 years.
So I just, my love hate this past week.
Yep.
And I was off last week from the podcast towards the second half of the week, but I did my love hate. And my opening story was my way, way, way too early top 50 for 2022.
Right.
And I put Mark Andrews at number 20 overall. I put Travis Kelce at number 21.
How about that?
Overall. Yeah.
So there's
now
a conversation.
Now you got weird.
Yeah.
I got weird.
Hey. Hey.
I am concerned that Kelce is slowing down a little bit. There were pockets of inefficiency this year, not only from Kelce, but from the Chiefs offense overall. Mm. And I am concerned that, again, when you talk about the Chiefs and you talk about Mahomes and you talk about that entire KC offense, concern is, you know, a relative term, right? I mean, like, they're still elite. They're still amazing. They're still awesome. But the fact that they appeared human at various points in the season gives me pause as to putting him at the number one tight end position. Again, I'm at number 2. Mm-hmm. I'm right after Mark Andrews, not only in the tight end position, but in the overall ranks. And I have until August. I mean, this is going to change many, many times. But as I sit here today, if I had to do a draft for next year right now, I think I might take the younger Andrews, who is clearly the focal point of his team's passing offense, as opposed to Kelce, who splits with Tyreek Hill, and they get so weird. Did you know, like, Thirsty Kyle looked this up for me, but Travis Kelce, actually, you know how Mike Clay always does his OFP and, like, it's just
OTD,
like,
and everything.
OTD, yep. Exactly. Thank you. It was OTD is what I was looking for. Just, like, who got more touch than they should have and less touch than they should have? Did you know that Travis Kelce actually got more touchdowns this year than he should have? Wow. I want to say he had under 5 end zone targets this entire year. Like, just like, so he actually sort of got a little flukily lucky, believe it or not, on his scoring this year in terms of Travis Kelce. I believe he'll be 33 next year. Again, Travis Kelce is awesome, awesome, awesome. I'm not sitting here, but I'm just, yeah, I think there's a strong case to be made for Kelce not being the number one tight end fantasy next year. As somebody who has Kelce in a lot of dynasty leagues, I hope he watches this and it motivates him and he wants to make me look dumb. I would love that to be the case.
Doesn't take much.
Doesn't take much to make me look dumb. I often do it myself, to be candid. You know.
All right, let's keep things moving. Interesting conversation this offseason. But yep. Deebo Samuel, 5th in terms of the percentage of leagues in which he was on a finalist roster. Yesterday, he had 82 total yards, 3 catches, and a touchdown. I did not see this game, Stefania. How did it go for the 49ers?
You know, the 49ers had some highs and some lows. I would say that the best thing was that we saw the emergence of Trey Lance and he made progression through the game. Yeah. Deebo Samuel is still Deebo Samuel. And certainly I think he's as effective on the ground as he is through the air, although he did catch more passes yesterday. So it was a little bit different day for him. And Elijah Mitchell is going to be, you know, one of your top RB1s coming into next year.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that one there for a second, because that's an interesting thought, is Elijah Mitchell, who came back from a knee injury, came back and played and dominated touches yesterday, yeah. Stefania.
Surprising.
He had every single running back carry yesterday. Every single one.
He did. And it really wasn't expected to be that way. Although the one thing, if you recall, I did say was that they would keep assessing him through the game. It was one of those where if the knee was fine, they would let him continue to run. But if he was having problems, then obviously they would scale it back. So I think if you do play in week 18 and you have Elijah Mitchell, they are going to lean on him because the 49ers are in a must-win situation for next week. So they will be running Elijah Mitchell a lot.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, by the way, no Jeff Wilson in this game.
Yeah, it's, yeah. Talking about
that.
No, I know. I'm just.
If you were listening,
I was. Yeah. But you know what else I was also doing? I was getting this note from Kevin Pulsiver, who listens to the show. And by the way, Pulsiver,
who actually listens,
To the show. Well, listen, I sometimes farm out my listening. Sometimes I, you know, I have people that help me with my listening.
You have the most. You are unbelievable.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yes.
Kind of is.
Yeah. It's Please really tell us nice a Kevin Pulsiver note because I'm going to. Is this about Travis Kelce?
Four end zone targets this year. Travis Kelce had four the entire season, so up through 17 weeks.
Wow.
Travis Kelce has four end zone targets, tied for 25th among tight ends.
He's definitely going to have like 19 weird. Next week. Yeah. Just to get I mean, into he like might, but five. I'm just. Yeah.
My
know,
point is they get. When they. Speaking of getting weird, in all seriousness, when they get in the end zone, like whether it's shovel passes to Blake Bell or, you know, tight end tackle eligible plays, and then suddenly Noah Gray is running a reverse sweep. I'm like, they have so many different ways to score. And Andy Reid is obviously among the most creative play callers in the NFL, him and his entire staff. And so. Yeah, I just, you know, anyway, whatever. Mark Andrews is my number one tight end next year. I have Kelce at two as we sit here in January of 2022.
Interesting conversation again this offseason surrounding where the 49ers go with their backfield, whether Elijah Mitchell is the guy unto himself going into next year, whether Trey Sermon finds a spot, whether maybe Jeff Wilson Jr. has a role. A lot to unpack this offseason. Hunter Renfrow, undisputed number one pass catcher for the Las Vegas Raiders right now. He had a great game yesterday. He had 7 catches, 76 yards, a touchdown. And the day was this close to being that much bigger as at the end of the game, he caught a pass. It was one of those plays where it was initially ruled that he was not ruled down by contact and touched by a defender, and he scampered into the end zone. This could have easily been 7 catches for like 105 yards and 2 touchdowns. The defender just got a fingernail on Hunter Renfrow. The Raiders still won the game. All's well that ends well for them. Coming into next year, though, good grief. Like, I got to figure he's somewhere around the top 12, top 15 for wide receivers going into next season. Oh, my God.
What will be interesting to see is, so there's a couple things here. First off, Hunter Renfrow is a great story.
Yeah.
Just a great story. It's a great player. He is a great football player. I know he doesn't look the part, but he is absolutely a fantastic football player. Yeah. Like, give the man his respect. What I will tell you, though, Field, is what's interesting is obviously when Darren Waller is back and 100% healthy, what does this look like? What do the Raiders do with their coaching staff? You know,
a lot of questions.
So a lot of questions in terms of, like, Greg Olsen, who is their offense coordinator, I think has done a great job calling plays since John Gruden left the team. Is he retained? He's the one that's been calling the play, Rich Bisaccia, the special teams coach, but the offense has gone through Greg Olsen. So I think that's interesting what this offense looks like with Darren Waller. What do they do at outside receiver? Remember, this is a team that added Deshaun Jackson in the middle of the season. Henry Ruggs, of course, left the team. And so just how much of this production is just based on Hunter Renfrow is really, really good, and how much of this is based on, like, it's him or Zay Jones, who, by the way, also had a nice game. I mean, Zay Jones had a really nice game last.
He's been good for five straight.
But, you know what I mean? But, like,
it's
like Zay Jones.
I think it's more about Hunter Renfrow, to be honest with you. I really do believe, like, I'm at the point now where, like, you just got to trust your eyes, and the dude's unbelievable.
We agree on that.
Also, his quarterback is looking for him all the time now. Yeah. You know, his quarterback trusts him. So if those two things stay the same, and this is the guy who you have the trust and the confidence in, are you not? It's a volume issue too with Hunter Renfrow. That's part of the appeal for fantasy purposes in PPR. It's just, you know, you're going to have volume.
Right. But that's my counter argument. And it's not even an argument. It's just a question that just, I'm just like, again, Darren Waller tends to be, you know, the target magnet on that team. Yeah. And so when he's back healthy, does he get the same kind of volume? Are the Raiders shopping for a big wide receiver? If they sign Michael Gallup, I'm making something up, right? Then, like, just what does that offense look like? Especially, by the way, if there's a new coach and a new play caller, if there's a new quarterback, Derek Carr is rumored to, I think he's likely backfield, but I don't think it's 100% certain that Derek
Carr
is. That's
a fair way of categorizing it. Yeah, I think, but again, back to the through the context of whether or not I believe Hunter Renfrow has, like, comparable value next year. I think the answer is yes. Like, I'm in on the player.
He's a good player. You and I agree on the player. You and I agree.
Excellent player.
He is a very talented player.
Yeah.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
This is something to study in the offseason, too. So we just talked about Cooper Kupp. He's a slot receiver, right? Mm-hmm. He's had a monster year. Hunter Renfrow, slot receiver, monster year.
Mm-hmm.
if it wasn't for Cooper Kupp or Jonathan Taylor, you could argue the MVP of the fantasy playoffs is Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yes, you could.
Dan, you want to make this argument?
Yeah. I could. I know, but please, you go ahead, Matthew.
We're going to get to league winners in just a few moments.
It's interesting that it feels like there's this new breed of slot receivers that are more than just, you know, the best you sort of could hope for a slot receiver was kind of Julian Edelman.
Yeah.
Right? Just a guy that would get a ton of volume. You know, sort of peak Julian Edelman, like whatever, 4 touchdowns, but like, you know, 100 catches, whatever, something like that.
Kind Wes of
you
Welker, know,
Welker back in the day. Wes Welker in the day was like different. He's averaged 120 catches a year. It was unreal, right?
You know where he coaches now?
49ers wide receivers coach.
That's right.
There you go. So, but
yeah, no, it's rejuvenation. I have a different thought on it, and I'll share once we get to Amon-Ra St. Brown, because I think it's something that we're seeing, and we're seeing for the better for a lot of different teams. So let's just finish up quickly here on a guy who was on a bunch of finalist rosters. Cordarrelle Patterson, like, I think this might be the most interesting one of the group that we've talked about so far, because he's going to be a free agent after this season. He was remarkable when he got opportunities this year. He's also 8 years into his career, and the Falcons have come as close as any team to fully committing to Cordarrelle Patterson. And yet down the stretch, he was a 50-50 player with Mike Davis. Like, he was good yesterday. Excuse me, he was not good yesterday, I should say. 7.2 fantasy points. Like, kind of faded down the stretch when you kind of needed him most in the playoffs, Matthew. Like, do you think that this year is the start of, like, a mini peak for Cordarrelle Patterson? Or do you think that this year will be looked back at as the best version we ever saw of Cordarrelle Patterson? Still an incredible success story, but that the very best days of his fantasy value came this year and went this year.
Yeah, I'd somewhere in between. So prior to this year, he's never been usable as a fantasy option in any kind of consistent manner. Like, he would have these sort of spike games, but he was used as a special teamer. He was used occasionally. Like, the Patriots used him a little bit at running back, but he
would get Patriots had him at, like, I was talking to Damian about this a little while back. Like, before the Patriots signed him, he had something like, in like 6 years, he had like 50 total carries. He had like 48 for the Patriots, and then they faded for a couple of years when he went elsewhere, the Bears, and then this year he's up. I mean, he's obviously well north of 50. Sure. So this has been, I would guess that his total carries this year probably comes very close to his total career carries prior to this season.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And so my point is like, you're like, is this the peak we're ever going to see it? Like, is Cordarrelle Patterson a top 10 fantasy running back next year? Probably not.
No.
Right? Yeah. Right? It's not. Yeah. So to answer your question, I would say yes. Is this the peak that we've seen for Cordarrelle Patterson from a fantasy point of view? But the question is, does he turn back into a non-useful fantasy piece, which he was basically every year prior to this year? Like, he was not somebody that you could ever start consistently in fantasy, and I would argue that he is. Like, I think that the Falcons found a way to use him. Look, the Falcons offense just in general was a mess this year. Give him another year. Hopefully Calvin Ridley comes back. You know, we pray for Calvin in that situation. Another year of Kyle Pitts. We'll see what happens with Matt Ryan in the offseason, but Arthur Smith getting another year in that offense. We'll see if let's see if Patterson comes back as well and what team uses him. But feels like any team that signs Patterson this year is going to sign him as more than just what he's been used for as before, which is just like a really, you know, as a specialty guy, a depth guy, a gadget guy, and a special teams guy. Mike Davis got the touchdown here. If Patterson gets that touchdown, maybe you look at his game differently. They're playing in the snow in Buffalo. Yeah. It's a tough matchup. Better players than Patterson struggled there too. But
50% of the snaps yesterday.
Yep.
3 straight duds from Patterson, all in the playoffs. He's a free agent. I think it'll be interesting to see
north of 30 years old. I get it. I get it. So my answer to the question is like, I think he's somewhere in between, because prior to this year, he wasn't useful in fantasy at all. This year, he was a top 10 fantasy running back for much of the season. I think he's probably somewhere in between that next year.
Daniel?
Closing out this conversation, coming into this year, Cordarrelle Patterson had 167 carries. This year, as of right now, he has 149.
So good on the Falcons, who I know the record is just okay, but they have actually played pretty competitive football for a roster largely bereft of talent. Let's get to some league winners, Matthew, and we start in Cincinnati, where we had 2 players. And we'll start with the quarterback, Joe Cool, Joe Burrow, who yesterday threw for 446 yards with 4 touchdowns and 0 interceptions, good for 34.8 fantasy points. He has been unbelievably fun to watch over these past couple weeks. The confidence is through the roof. And Stefania told you that earlier he did have a little bit of a knee situation late in the game. Hopefully he is A-okay. But we're talking about one of the best stretches for a two-week span from a quarterback we have ever seen in fantasy football. Just remarkable in back-to-back weeks.
He's looked great. He's looked every bit the part of a franchise quarterback, of a number one overall quarterback, the way he was drafted. There were concerns coming into the season. Credit, by the way, I want to credit the Cincinnati Bengals and credit their front office, because I will raise my hand and say I was among the chorus that said, I get it with Ja'Marr Chase, but you guys should draft Penei Sewell. You guys got to protect Joe Burrow, get a wide receiver in the second round, get somebody in free agency. I was on that. There were a lot of critics that said that, and I was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to own that and say, like,
you weren't alone. I
mean, you guys were right.
A lot of us felt that way.
No, a lot of people felt that way.
Yeah.
And by the way, jury is still out.
I
by
might
the way.
Still be on that train.
Yeah, we're 16 weeks in, right?
Like, huh?
Right.
T. Higgins is still plenty good. Tyler Boyd is still plenty good. Joe Mixon is still plenty good. Not like they didn't. Not like Ja'Marr Chase hasn't been awesome, but
he's been amazing. But like, I think, mean, yeah, absolutely.
Ja'Marr Chase might wind up being generational. Like, you know what I mean?
Maybe,
like,
maybe.
And so, at any rate, but whatever. Yeah. Their defense was better than I thought it was going to be coming into the season. That's what's impressive, is that it's a good defense.
Yeah,
Cincinnati
is.
Has a legit defense. And yet they've still passed at this very high rate. It's a really exciting offense. I was texting with a friend of mine last night who's a lifelong Bengals fan. And I just said, you know, I was congratulating him, a long time coming. I said, you got to be really excited, not only about this year, AFC North champs, but you sit there and you go, you know, Burrow, Boyd, Higgins, Chase, Mixon, like, they got a lot of nice young pieces that are going to be there for a number of years.
And by the way, I just want to reiterate that Joe Burrow, you know, he missed a month last year because of getting injured.
Sure.
Had his knee shredded, basically. Came back. Everybody was concerned, myself included, you know, after seeing him at training camp. He's definitely a little apprehensive still coming back after a major knee injury. Everybody wondered what that would look like when games actually started, when he had to play in traffic, when people were coming for him, when there was a pass rush. Could he scramble well enough to make plays? I think we've seen everything, every single thing that has been asked of him, he's been able to do. And I don't know if I can convey just how remarkable it is to be able to do that pretty much out of the gate. He did get better as the season went on, settled down a little bit in the pocket, but being willing to stand in, take hits when he did, and move the way he has coming off that injury. And oh, by the way, he had that pinky dislocation. His pinky's still not right. Mm. He's still throwing the ball amazingly well. That won't be 100% till after the season's over. So I think, imagine what a completely healthy offseason and a totally healthy Joe Burrow does for you next year.
He started a little bit slow. They were a little bit conservative. They went more run heavy early in the season, trying to protect that knee a little bit. But I agree with you, Stefania. Really exciting to think about the Bengals are next year with a full healthy offseason. Ja'Marr Chase in camp again for another year. Like, it's exciting to think about that, and we'll see what they do in the offseason as well in Cincinnati. But the future is bright for my friends that root for the Bengals.
And that is in part because of Ja'Marr Chase, who had a record-setting performance yesterday. He had more receiving yards yesterday than any rookie in NFL history has ever had in a single game. He had 3 touchdowns. He had 11 catches, 266 total yards. 55.6 fantasy points, Matthew. This is the closest thing that we have seen, or we will see, to Alvin Kamara this year, obviously. Just unbelievable performance. Like, if you have Ja'Marr Chase, congratulations on winning your finals. Congratulations. You just won your finals with Ja'Marr Chase, a record-setting performance. And as we just said, we'll see where things net out historically. We look back at this draft 12 years from right now. Should they have taken Penei Sewell? Should they have taken Ja'Marr Chase? Who knows? But the early returns for Ja'Marr Chase are absolutely, completely absurd. He looks like the kind of guy that's going to be a monster in fantasy football for the next decade. Looks like an absolute nightmare for opposing defenses.
Easy. I mean, like, you know he's coming and you still can't stop him. The run after the catch. He had 266 yards, but
stupid.
It's video game numbers, right?
It's amazing.
They're stupid numbers, but what was incredible to me was that 72-yard touchdown, his first touchdown of the game, where he basically outruns everyone in Kansas City. He catches the ball in traffic.
Yeah.
And then what should have been like a 25-yard, like, I haven't gone back to watch, you know, but it's probably should have been like a 25 or 30-yard reception, wound up being a 72-yard touchdown just because he gets the ball in traffic and then literally outruns everyone. It's not that he was ahead of him and outran him. He ran past them. He ran past. There were second. There were defenders that were behind him that he just was able to run past. Like he just insanity. Give some context here. I posted this on social media here just to give some context. You mentioned Alvin Kamara, the 6-touchdown game last year, which was amazing. So because people were asking me, hey, where does this rank all time?
Okay.
And weirdly, it doesn't rank that high. It's the second best game by a rookie ever.
Okay.
It's the best one by a rookie wide receiver. It's the second best by any rookie. It is the 14th best game. And this is all via fantasy points, right? It is the 14th best game in NFL history post AFL NFL merger. So we're all doing this post the merger because there were some wacky games in the AFL. But post NFL AFL merger, it's the 14th best game fantasy wise in NFL history. It's the 7th best by a wide receiver. And it's the best game for a player ever in his team's 16th game, which is important. So, you know, he's nothing short of spectacular. People ask me, what's the best fantasy game ever of all time? That is still Jerry Rice in 1990. 13 for 222 and 5 touchdowns, I believe, off the top of my head. 65.1 fantasy points for Jerry Rice in 1990.
Legend.
It was a passing league back then, too.
It was definitely, I was going to say, it was harder to pass the ball back then than it is now. Like, you could actually defend. You could get near.
You could grab.
You could do a lot of different things in the league.
Stick them. So
Jerry Rice, still the GOAT. But by the way, to be mentioned in the same breath as Jerry Rice, you know, and be on a list with Jerry Rice, right? Again, there's only 6 wide receivers better that have had a better game than Ja'Marr Chase did on Sunday. Jerry Rice, of course, being the top of that list. I mean, it was just like it felt like Kansas City just had no solution for him, and he won people their leagues. He won people a lot of money. He won me. We have a prize in the War Room League for most points over the course of the playoffs, like the leading playoff scorer. I have won that. Thank you, Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah.
Ja'Marr Chase led me to that. I won that.
I know. Our team did not win that consolation bracket.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was tough. But you know, what are you going to do? I'll tell you exactly what you're going to do.
You're going to say, congratulations, Matthew.
Congratulations.
There you go. How hard was that?
Yes.
Congratulations.
Congratulations,
I hope you enjoy your consolation.
But there was a consolation prize?
Yes.
Matthew? Yes.
All right. Let's go get weird after the show.
Look, I don't want to get a whole diatribe. It is what it is. Like, whatever. The problem is that I had the most points over the course of playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
I think I would have won. The problem is that week 15
here's the problem.
Was the stars of my team.
Yep.
Joe Mixon.
Yep.
Ja'Marr Chase.
Yep.
Ramondre Stevenson that game.
Now you're blaming Ja'Marr Chase.
Damon Harris. Okay, and Kirk Cousins was a top 10 fantasy quarterback.
Yeah,
those four guys in that week 15, everyone knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I don't know.
In week 15, those four guys scored less than Russell Gage combined.
Wow.
And so, what are you going to do?
I would have started better players, but you can.
Had I played the Hasselbecks, I'd have won the title. But instead, I played Teddy Bruschi, who had Russell Gage go off and had a bunch of his guys go off. And that's fantasy football. That's the game we play. Okay. What are you going to do?
Got it.
But yes, I did score the most points during the fantasy playoffs, and Ja'Marr Chase was a big part of that. Thank you, Ja'Marr Chase.
Thankfully,
and I'm winning money
because
of it.
You did not go into a diatribe. Appreciate
that.
That
was good.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what? I was told we were getting weird.
It's good.
You know what? I heard that, Stefania.
Yeah.
How about that?
It's really good. Really good stuff right there. Really good.
Awesome.
Should we keep moving forward?
Yes.
Yeah, what do I care at this point? Sure.
Not sure you ever cared. Darrell Williams was great again yesterday for the Chiefs. Darrell Williams, who continues to produce in a major way. He had 3 catches, 107 total yards, and Darrell Williams had 2 touchdowns, 25.7 fantasy points. Seems evident that when he gets the chance to be the RB1 for Kansas City, the value is much greater than when Clyde Edwards-Helaire has the job unto himself. Darrell Williams, a rock-solid option. And Stefania, do we have any sense about whether CEH will play next week for Kansas City on Saturday against Denver?
No, we just knew that his shoulder didn't turn out to be as worrisome as they originally thought it could be when he was injured, but he didn't travel with the team, so we don't know anything based on what happened this past week.
Yeah,
we'll look to see if he can get back to practice this week.
Yeah, so no practice this past week for CEH. Seems like there's at least a chance there. Williams will play. The Chiefs have a chance at the number one seed. They have to win and have Tennessee lose to Houston. You decide how likely that is for yourself, but it wouldn't surprise me if Darrell Williams has the job by himself again next week.
100%.
Sony Michel.
I was just going to say, for the second straight year, a Rams running back has dominated in the postseason. It was Cam Akers last season.
Yeah.
This year, Sony Michel, over the last three games, 349 yards,
you know what,
two
though?
Touchdowns, 52.9 fantasy points. Yeah,
that's cool. You know what's cooler, Matthew?
What's cooler?
Uh-oh. A mea culpa by you.
Ooh.
Because we had to sit here and in this disgusting display of humility, apologize to you because Cam Akers was going to play in week 17. Yeah. It was disgusting. I went to bed sick that night.
Good.
And yet, Cam Akers did not play yesterday.
No, he did not.
He did not play at all.
Yeah.
So you have the floor to offer an apology to myself, mostly Stefania Bell, and Daniel Dopp as well.
Thank you. I appreciate you giving me the floor. Here's what I would like to say. I apologize for nothing. I was dead right. Get right on me.
Oh, my God.
I was dead right
on
this. No,
you weren't.
Here's the thing. I'll tell you exactly why I was dead right. Because I said, looks like it might be Cam Akers backing him up. And you guys poo-pooed it. You know what was going on? There was a lot of poo-pooing. You guys said, that will never happen. There's no chance of that. What are you thinking about? You rolled your eyes. That's wrong. Maybe he shows up in the postseason, you said. And I said, no, no, no. I'm telling you. And
week 17.
I talked to Lindsay Theory. Hold on. I said, I'm talking to Lindsay Theory. And there's a chance. And at the time, then reporting came out later that night, like, hey, looks like Cam Akers. We think Cam Akers will be active. And you guys both apologized to me the next day. Rightfully so, because my reporting was accurate. What I said was accurate. Now, as the week went on, things changed.
Was
I accurate at the time? Yes, he was going to do it. But as the week went on, things changed. They reevaluated. It was never that he was not going to. He was going to play. And then all of a sudden, at the last minute, he didn't. So I apologize for nothing. I was dead right. You guys were wrong. Hail to me. Screw you guys. I'm out of here.
Yes. That's awesome. Really?
That's the Cartman.
I know.
Can I?
No.
Can I get out of here? I would love to.
Nope.
I'll be, I'm done.
To you. Anyway, Sony Michel was good yesterday for the Rams. Yeah. 99 yards, three catches, and a touchdown for Sony. 18.9 fantasy points. We talked about this last week. Like, the Rams backfield actually covered the bases for everybody who came into the season with a prediction on it, right? It's going to be Sony Michel and Daryl Henderson. It was. It's going to be just Daryl Henderson. It was. It's going to be just Sony Michel. It was. It's just a reminder that it's a weekly game, not a season-long game. How about this story for Rashad Penny, who for the past 4 weeks leads the NFL in rushing yards.
So stoked.
95 more than anybody else. And yesterday he was just remarkable as well. 32.5 fantasy points and 185 total yards. He had two catches. He had two rushing touchdowns. A great story. I'm not sure it turns into anything more than that for him in Seattle, as he is going to be a free agent. We'll see whether he gets an opportunity to return to Seattle. But an interesting name to throw onto the radar for free agency this upcoming March. There are actually a handful of guys that have had good seasons that are veterans that are going to be free agents. Sony Michel, Rashad Penny, Melvin Gordon, James Conner. That's without me really even putting any effort into thinking about them. So a potentially fun group of running backs available in free agency this offseason. Good for him. Let's talk about Amon-Ra St. Brown, though.
By the way, this is pretty cool, by the way. Buddy of mine from Twitter, Connor Allen, at Connor Allen NFL, he posted a screenshot of this. He put down a bet of $100 for Rashad Penny to lead the NFL in rushing yards on Sunday.
Nice.
Plus 8,000.
It was plus 8,000?
For Rashad Penny to lead the NFL in rushing yards on Sunday. Yeah.
Wait, what? It was 8,000 were the
plus
odds?
Plus 8,000. He put down 100 put down 100 bucks, won $8,100. That's a hell of a call. Just that really is impressive. So anyway, shout out to at Connor Allen NFL.
Wow, I thought it would mean like I could have seen like 20 plus 2,500. Maybe he's run well the past like two of the past 3 weeks prior
playing,
to that.
And they were playing, and
yeah,
they were
but the
playing,
Lions are the a Lions, really good rush defense, right,
they're
guys?
They're playing the Lions. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway,
let's talk about the other side of this game.
Anyway,
then.
Shout out to that. But yeah, Rashad Penny.
Good for you, Connor. Yeah, that's awesome. He looked great. Let's talk about the other side of the game, though, because this one is the one that I think has relevance going forward as well. Here is a complete list, and I had to dig out the old research notes for this one. The entire list of players who, as rookies, had at least 8 catches in 5 straight games. Amon-Ra St. Brown. And that's it.
That's it.
The list.
He's the only rookie to ever do that. Yesterday, he had 8 catches for 111 yards and a touchdown. And this is the part that I was talking about earlier, Matt, that I wanted to come back to. He had 23 rushing yards and a rushing touchdown. Yeah. We are seeing this new wave of coaches, and maybe it's Kyle Shanahan, maybe it's Arthur Smith, it's Cordarrelle Patterson. I'm not sure who was most responsible for, but they're saying, you know what? If this guy's the best playmaker we have, why limit him to just catches where we're dependent upon the player being open, the quarterback seeing him, and the quarterback getting him the football accurately? Amon-Ra St. Brown's being utilized in a bunch of different ways right now. What a fun player. I am legitimately happy. I know Daniel's team lost yesterday. I know that they are headed towards a top 2 pick. But if you can't see the promise that some of the Lions' young players are bringing, then you're missing the boat here. Amon-Ra St. Brown's got a real chance. Like, I don't think this is a lucky streak where he is, you know, they're down by 30 points and he's just catching passes against air and it's working out in his favor. Like, this seems like the start of something really good. Like, Amon-Ra St. Brown will be one of the most discussed players this offseason in terms of the wide receiver ranks.
Let me turn to Secret Squirrel Daniel Dopp, our Detroit Lions correspondent here at the Fantasy Focus 06010. So Amon-Ra St. Brown has been nothing short of phenomenal. Mm. Really exciting.
Yeah.
But how much of his production do you think is because no TJ Hockenson for all of it, no DeAndre Swift for much of it, like sort of devoid of playmakers? Jamal Williams was out for a while. Like, how much of it is just basically like they don't really have anyone else? He's sort of the only game in town versus, hey, this is a really talented rookie that has come into his own over the second half of the year, and the Lions coaches have figured out how to use him, and he's been quarterback proof. Like, whether it was Jared Goff or Tim Boyle under center, Amon-Ra St. Brown has been nothing short of amazing.
I don't think it's mutually exclusive that what you're talking about is he has had increased opportunities because of those things that have happened, right? So that's obviously led to his numbers towards the second half of the season when they needed somebody to step up to look nicer than they had at the beginning of the season. So I don't think it's going to be this necessarily full time next year. That being said, this is exactly what you want. I can only imagine as a coach, when I give a young player the opportunity to come out there and do something, he took every advantage of it towards the entire second half of the season, man.
So I think this is somewhat in the hands of Amon-Ra St. Brown. And I don't want to be unfair to this player. I think it's fair based off what we have read and what has been reported. But this has some shades of Brandon Ayuk last year, where other players were out. Debo was banged up. George Kittle was out. Brandon Ayuk became the guy, in some ways the only guy there. And he took it and he ran with it and he had a remarkable stretch. And we all thought this is a breakout candidate in season 2. Kyle Shanahan made it pretty clear this offseason that there were certain things that he needed to do, Brandon Ayuk, to hold up his end of the bargain, that he wasn't doing enough, right? I mean, it seemed pretty obvious that he was being held back in some ways by himself. So I think in part, this is upon Amon-Ra St. Brown himself. Like, the opportunity is going to be there.
Yeah.
TJ Hockenson will be back, and that's great. They may draft a wide receiver high, and that's great as well. Maybe they sign a wide receiver in free agency as well.
They've got Josh. I mean, you know, whatever, Josh Reynolds, and like they tried with Tyrell Williams at the beginning of the year. They don't have a lot there.
But as of right now, I think there's a chance. Like, I get the hesitation that he's doing this because there are so few pieces around him. I also think, if you just watch him, he's a freaking talented dude.
He's super talented.
Like, 8 catches in 5 straight games. It's pretty good. It's literally never been done by a rookie before.
Brandon Ayuk is a great comp there. And not that you're saying that they're similar players, obviously. They're different players. But just that, right. Because, I mean,
that situation.
He's had a touchdown in 4 of the last 5 games, right? I mean, he's been, and so, in double-digit targets in 5 straight games. And so, does he get that kind of volume? Does he get, you know, he's had 125 points over the last 5 weeks. He's the second best wide receiver in fantasy, right? You know, I mean,
second best wide receiver in fantasy. Yeah,
it's absurd.
Over the last five weeks. It's absurd.
Let's get to a couple more here. And just I'm super happy for Amon-Ra St. Brown. He seems like the kind of guy that's just got, humble shoulders and just continues to catch everything. I love watching him play. Happy for Daniel. This team, I know, 2-13-1, Daniel, but still, there are some pieces that you have to be excited about. There's some progress you can be excited about as well. A couple of players that were either disappointments or got banged up. Let's go to 2 running backs to find that I think are injury notes to watch in week 18. First one is Ronald Jones for the Bucks, who left this game And obviously this story got overshadowed by his teammate Antonio Brown, but he left this game early.
Yeah, he left in the third quarter with an ankle injury. It was originally listed as questionable to return, but we didn't see him, and there really has been no follow-up on it yet. So,
yeah. Obviously, the Bucs, most of the attention was paid on Antonio Brown after the game yesterday. Keyshawn Vaughn played a decent amount yesterday, as did Le'Veon Bell. Ronald Jones did not return after Stefania mentioned, so we'll keep an eye on that one. Keyshawn Vaughn will make the waiver wire column for Week 18. I do not know exactly what the Bucs will approach this game like, but somebody has to tote the rock. The Bucs all of a sudden are very, very thin at some key positions on offense that previously they were very, very deep at. One more, Stefania, just on the injury front. Damian Harris left the game early for the Patriots yesterday. Did he return?
He did not. But okay. Afterwards, he did talk to the media. You always say that's a good sign. He was asked about his hamstring injury. That's what he left the game with. Yeah. All he would say was, I'm good. If you think back, he was originally injured December 6th. I think it was a Monday night game. And he's been on the injury report because of this hamstring ever since. Missed a week. There's been a sort of a question. You remember, it was a toss-up between him and Ramondre Stevenson because they've both been a little bit banged up. So the hamstring has kept him as questionable on the injury report. But then yesterday, it's hard to know whether it was something serious or whether it was just, you know, with the game being as it was, they were being cautious with him, but certainly something to watch.
It strikes me as not serious, just given what you mentioned, the context of being out there afterwards and not like walking with a limp at the podium when he was doing his, I don't think you, from what I've read, right?
Yeah, just kind of dismissing it, you know.
Seems like he will be good. The Patriots have clinched a playoff spot. They play Miami next week. We'll see whether they approach this game like they want to win and keep their, they have a chance to win the AFC East. It would require the Bills losing to the Jets. Again, you decide how likely that is. But if no Damian Harris, Ramondre Stevenson would step into a more prominent role as he did yesterday. 19 carries, 107 yards, 2 touchdowns. You know, the Patriots have, I don't know where their top two running backs ranks in terms of the NFL, right? But I would think that Ramondre Stevenson and Damian Harris forms one of the best 1-2 punches amongst running backs in the NFL. I don't know. I mean, whatever. Top 7, 8, I don't know specifically. But it's better for their team than it is for our fantasy teams,
yeah,
right?
1,000%.
Because it's, while Damian Harris did find the end zone against yesterday, like
twice.
Damian Harris, yes, again, he was good yesterday. But like, it feels like, generally speaking, it's going to be one or the other, not both in the same week. Whereas Cleveland, amongst others, you could actually have both supporting a fantasy-relevant role.
Maybe. It'd be really interesting to see sort of what they do. They want to be run heavy. You know, I mean, they at least this
right
year.
Now,
Right now, they're run heavy. And there have been years when the Patriots have supported two fantasy-relevant running backs. Certainly, if you, they're both going to eat into the fantasy value of each other. I wonder if they played Jacksonville. And so if they're not putting up a 50 burger on Jacksonville, and by the way, Harris also has the hammy, does Stevenson get the kind of run that he did yesterday?
Probably you know what not. I mean?
Like,
yeah.
Probably not. Like, yeah. It feels like it might've just been mostly Damian Harris with some Stevenson.
Yeah.
Like in a closer game and a fully healthy Damian Harris.
Right.
Does Stevenson get over 100 yards and 2 touchdowns? I'm not convinced. Probably not, is sort of my take. I think there's a chance, I'm saying that there may be a Patriots running back you can count on next year.
Sure.
Dumb as it is to say that, you know, because, you know, it's the Patriots and they switch it every week. But anyway, David Harris and Ramondre Stevenson are both super talented.
We've got about 4 minutes left, and I want to do this one last thing. It's main lessons from 2021. Obviously, this season has been an interesting season. There's been so many things that we've seen. We'll get to some of the rest of this tomorrow and Wednesday. We're still doing shows every day this week, so we'll be around. But I just want to start with you guys. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I feel like we should address Antonio Brown at, like, on one small level. Like, that's the big story in the NFL. And I'll just say this. I've seen all the memes. They're really funny. I get it. I feel bad for the guy. There's clearly something wrong. You know what I mean?
There's a cry for help yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's clearly, you know, I mean, so anyway, I'm not going to pile on the guy. I'm just going to, there's clearly something wrong there from my point of view.
Yeah. And I think there's a chance that Antonio Brown's played his last down in the NFL. You know, as far as football is concerned, the Bucs really needed Antonio Brown.
Kind of feels like football should be the last thing on Antonio Brown's mind. Like, no, but with all the things that have happened, he obviously is dealing with
something
some stuff
that's much bigger than the game.
Way
so
bigger than football.
We hope that he is back to a healthier state soon. We'll worry about football at a different time.
Yep.
We only have about 2 minutes here, so I'll just quickly go around the bent. I mean quickly here. Just a reminder, my big lesson from this year is that we get so focused in on absolutes during the preseason, and we need to focus more on like the chunks of the season. And Matthew, I'll lead this right into you because, put differently, fantasy is not a season-long game. It's a weekly game.
Yeah, being able to be nimble and adjust every single week. Again, like, people are winning champion, like whatever. Jamar Chase was amazing, but people have made the finals or won their league thanks to the Justin Jackson last week or Braxton Berrios picking him up, who we mentioned on Fantasy Football Now yesterday. Jarrett Patterson, we mentioned yesterday, the long shot that worked out. Like Tyler Huntley, we just mentioned Amon-Ra St. Brown, Rashad Penny, guys like this again.
Yeah.
And then you think back to the middle of the season, right, where there were players here and there where you got like a couple of weeks out of Darrell Williams, for example, and then he was again a great again yesterday. Like, it's a weekly game, and so much is spent, and I make this point every single year, but it's just a good reminder that that when you draft, you're drafting a foundation, and how important it is to be active on the waiver wire and pay attention to trends, because it is absolutely a weekly game where you're not going to be, very rare can you start the same 10 players every single week.
It's fine.
Yeah, at the start of the year, I think we talked about the fact that COVID was a factor last year, and I said it's not gone, and it will continue to impact the game. And I think we saw at the end of this season, kind of the time when it was most critical for everybody, right, fantasy playoffs and leading up to getting into the fantasy playoffs, that COVID played a significant role in terms of availability. The protocol rules changed, so you had to stay current with that. And I think just knowing that there's so much uncertainty around the future in the broader world with COVID, it's not going away. And it's things like this are going to continue to be a factor in the game of fantasy football. So the more tuned in you are to everything around it, the better you're going to be.
And my last one, I'll be real quick about this. No matter how bad the Detroit Lions were in 2013, and Field, you already talked about this a little bit earlier in the show, 2-13-1, they have been awful this year. They've had some really tough losses, but at the end of the day, not one time did Dan Campbell lead this Lions team into halftime down 42-7 to a division rival.
Wow.
And I will hold on to that for the rest of the year.
It's the small things in life.
It's the small things, Field.
All right, we got to go. We are back Tuesday with a Monday Night Football recap, some waiver wire talk, and perhaps more fighting words between Daniel and Matthew. For Matthew and Stefania and Daniel, I am Field. Good luck if you have anything left on the line tonight in Monday Night Football between the Browns and the Steelers.
I miss it. What did Daniel say?
He's a fantasy guru in a boat on an island. Going full Haynesworth without even trying. Award-winning creations, like his news or noise segment, are reasons we all love the cut of his jib. Country fast and strong, bordering away again in Matthew Berryville. Searching for Field Shoe in a pile of junk. When you lose a bet, you have 1 year to pay. He's the king of football fantasy. He's Matthew Berry. He's Matthew Berry. He's Matthew Berry.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.